Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for hanging around with me. Thanks for staying with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. That's the short one. If you forget that, you can remember Jim Blasingame. Put a .com on the end of that, and that'll work too. Walter Olson is our friend, ladies and gentlemen. Walter's been with us before. He's with us again. He's senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's written on many topics over the years, but especially focusing recently on law and lawyers. He's the author of the new book called The Rule of Lawyers, How the New Litigation Elite Threatens America's Rule of Law. He's also the author of The Litigation Explosion, and he writes for a number of different publications, which I know many of you have seen his byline. He's our good friend. Walter, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim, for having me on.
It's good to have you back. The Rule of Lawyers, I love that title. It's obviously a play on the rule of law. Is that what's happened with our legal system these days, Walter, that the lawyers are ruling the roost?
Yeah, I'm afraid that's been the case for a while, and we lose the benefits of the rule of lawyers, and we move into a system where almost anything can happen to you in court, and a clever lawyer can take advantage of the law to prey on the business community, really, with cases that may not have any merit, but make money anyway.
Prey is the right word. I've been talking about predatory practices by litigators for a long time, and how it really is damaging to not only to the marketplace, which is what I'm certainly interested in, but also our society. You, in your book, Walter, The Rule of Lawyers, you talk about kind of a sea change that happened around the 1970s. Give us an idea for how things used to be and how they've evolved since about that point in time that you mark when the litigation situation kind of made a left turn.
Well, until right around then, and I think the 1970s is as good a place as any to draw the line. Litigation was it certainly had a role in the system. It was certainly a time when people had to go to court, but it was seen as a last resort that was not encouraged. It was something that happened when all else failed. And the change that came in around then, and you see it very much in what the law schools were teaching, in the fashionable ideas that people were writing books about, but the idea was that litigation is wonderful for society, and the more of it goes on, the more justice there'll be, and business will be more careful and more ethical, and will pursue safety, and up to a point there is some sense to that, but they really, I think, got the telescope turned around to the wrong end, because they overlooked how costly and how full of the danger of abuse litigation is, which helps explain why it had always been regulated very carefully, why the courts had taken a very close look at lawsuits to make sure that they weren't just tactical ways of using a weapon against someone. So you saw proposals, and I quote one of them in the early part of my book, to take something like class actions, which used to be a pretty specialized, not very common part of the legal system, and apply them to pretty much every social problem in the book, from the costs of to our health of tobacco smoking, to the cost of obesity from food. This was all being proposed as far back as the 1970s, and people think fast food litigation. Isn't it amazing what we can come up with now? That as I showed, that was being proposed back in the mid-70s by well-known lawyers. And so the law, of course, back then was by no means in a position where they could start using it to go run around and sue McDonald's. So it began changing, and they chipped away, and they chipped away, and they eroded this, and they undermined that. And it became easier and easier to file some of these sorts of suits until, by this point, it's hard to know for sure what you can't file and get someone quick to look at it.
Product liability was something that really became – product liability suits really, really helped to turn the tide, I think, in the 70s, the way you mark this. And I think you're right about that in terms of the dating. But and when we come back after these messages, I want to talk a little bit about how product liability suits wound up really damaging, and basically one industry that I know of basically brought it to a halt. And that's we'll talk about that right after these messages with our friend Walter Olson, the author of The Rule of Lawyers 22. Back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and if you'd like to ask me a question, if you'd like to ask a question of anything we're talking about, you can email me at askjim@jbsba.com, and we'll get your question answered and on the air, hopefully, too. Walter Olson is our guest. He's the author of The Rule of Lawyers. Walter, where's your book available, please?
It is available in better bookstores and, of course, over the Internet from the usual places.
Right, and the last name is Walter is Olson, Olson. Walter K. Olson is the way it's pronounced, and the way it's, is the full name, and the and it's no E on the in the end of the name there. Walter Olson with two O's. And also tell us about the Manhattan Institute.
The Manhattan Institute is a so-called think tank, one of the more prominent ones in the public policy area, and as the name implies, it's located in New York, supports work in a lot of areas, especially known for urban policy, because it was very close to Mayor Giuliani when he was mayor of New York, but also everything from healthcare, education, welfare policy, trade, taxes, and
would
in
it
my
be
case,
safe,
what's
would
wrong
it be
with
safe
the legal
to say that the Manhattan Institute was more of a free market kind of a libertarian?
It is more business oriented. Its writers tend to appreciate the need for economic freedom in whatever area they're writing about.
Free markets and liberty. Yeah. Let's get back to what I alluded to as we went to the break, Walter. I mentioned an industry that basically was ground to a halt and squished like a bug in a relatively short period of time. And only recently has come back, and that is the private aircraft industry. The you mentioned in your book, you talked about the product liability litigation that happened in the 70s that really kind of exploded this rule of lawyers that we're experiencing right now. And basically they put the Piper and the Cessna companies out of the and some others, including the Mooney Corporation down in Kerrville, Texas, out of the business of making small single engine and light twin engine aircraft. They just didn't make any new ones anymore because what was happening, Walter, and I was part of this industry. I was flying airplanes in those days as part of my job, and what would happen would be if I were flying in a 20-year-old Beechcraft. By the way, Beechcraft was another part of that play, one of those players. If I was flying a 20-year-old Beechcraft and I crashed my airplane, some lawyer could go back and sue every builder of a component of that airplane, even though that part might have been 20 years old.
Yeah, it was absolutely devastating for that industry, which is an industry that America had built and led in. As you say, after a crash, it didn't matter if the plane was 20 or even 40 or even 60 years.
Whose fault it was that the airplane crashed.
Yeah, you could have had an obvious failure of maintenance or an obvious failure of pilot error,
right,
and they would still sue the list of the primary manufacturer. manufacturer and the component makers, and then they would just say, look, pay us the money to be let out, and then we'll develop our theory against the other ones.
And they literally brought that industry to a halt.
It was devastating. It lost out to foreign competitors from Brazil and elsewhere. Eventually, Congress had to pass a law giving them a little bit of liability protection to encourage them to come back in.
But right now, the most basic of a single-engine airplane is still a couple hundred thousand dollars.
Oh, and you are paying there an enormous insurance overhead against being sued, plus something for the cost of making the plan.
Absolutely. Let's fast forward closer to the present day, Walter. What has all this wrought on our society and on our marketplace now?
Well, you get a society that not only is spending a huge amount of money on this, businesses know this when they write their liability insurance bills, but is paying in a lot of less tangible ways because this really encourages workers and customers to be seen as potential litigants. They walk in the door and you begin to worry about them. What are they going to see you over? Mm-hmm. Which means the whole relationship is made a little colder and more bureaucratic. Adversarial. Sign here before we'll take you out on anything recreational, so you sign some 1,500-page document. There's no possible time to read that before you go off on your mm-hmm. hiking trip or whatever, and it discourages business from doing so many public-spirited things. I mean, one case in the headlines recently was the alleged killer nurse from Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and the hospitals had not warned each other about the concerns they'd had, and they explained, you cannot in this business pass on honest references, or you are a sitting duck for someone mm-hmm. to come along and sue you over the references. This can't be good news for society. It's got to have reached the point of diminishing returns a long time ago.
Let me throw out another quick example before we go to the break. I know I spoke to the leader of a Salvation Army unit, and he said that not too long before we were talking, a gentleman walked up who had walked into town. He was homeless, but he said, "You know what?" He said, "I'm down on my luck, but I'm not down on my own attitude about myself." He said, "I need a place to stay, and I need food, but please let me work for it. Please let me wash a window, mow the yard. Please let me earn some of my dignity back." And you know what the guy said? He said, "I couldn't do it because of our insurance, our liability insurance." He couldn't even let that guy earn his own meal because he might get hurt and sue them.
Yeah.
Stand by, Walter. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, we're going to see if Walter has any ideas about how to fix this problem. And it is a problem, no question about it. It's Intel. Stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Walter Olson. Walter K. Olson is the author of The Rule of Lawyers, which is a book that I recommend you take a look at, and very fascinating information in this book, folks. And don't forget also that you'll see Walter's byline in a lot of different publications, New York Post, American City Business Journals, different publications around the country, as well as at their website. Give us the website there, Walter, the Manhattan Institute.
And the Manhattan Institute has its own website. Just type it in with a hyphen, .org. Also, I have a website on the issues we've been talking about called overlawyered.com.
Right, I remember that from last time.
Enjoy. Yeah, we do talk about that.
Overlawyered.com. Good. Check that out. And folks, Walter is considered to be the world's expert on over-lawyering, too, by the way. Walter, look, let's clear one thing up. You and I aren't anti-lawsuit. We know, both of us know, that our court system is the envy of the world, that it's the most efficient in the world. It's an opportunity. It gives us, you and me, as regular citizens, an opportunity to make sure that we can petition for justice and hopefully get it. But the thing is, so sometimes lawsuits are necessary, and sometimes companies need to be sued. Sometimes they need to be made to behave themselves. And I don't think we deny that at all. But the thing is, let's take an example quickly of the tobacco lawsuits. Now, I don't like cigarettes. I don't like smoke. I don't smoke. I don't like to be around any of that. And it wouldn't bother me if the tobacco industry went away. But the truth is that the way that thing was done, everybody knows, basically, Walter, that the lawyers got the money. I mean, some law firms, as you report in your book, got $2 billion in fees. How long does it take to earn $2 billion in fees?
Well, it takes one call to a state attorney general saying, hey, remember when we were roommates in law school? That's a little cynical, but the fact is that lawyers got it. There's no way of knowing for sure, but it's something like $10 billion in fees out of that. And for many of them, it was just a matter of having the money drop into their lap because they knew the politicians who hired them to represent the states.
Absolutely.
And there is something that's got to be wrong with that. There were other things wrong with those lawsuits, too, including changing the rules after the game has been played to make sure the tobacco companies lost.
All that happened was the tobacco industries lost. The plaintiffs, I mean, the actual victims got a pittance compared, or did they actually get anything?
Well, you see, the money went to the state governments, and immediately people who were dying of awful diseases from smoking and things said, well, this is money over the evils of the tobacco companies. You know, can we have some of it in the state? Said, oh, no, we're going to use it on highway projects and hiring more state employees and everything other than smokers.
Redistribution of wealth. Walter, we got about 2 minutes. What do we do about this? How can we fix this?
Well, I'm always looking at other countries. What have they done right in some cases that they don't have the crazy amount of litigation? And you can look at Canada or you can look at Europe or Australia or whatever. And the first thing you see in these systems is they've got a loser pays principle. If you file one of these lawsuits and it turns out the person you sued did nothing wrong, you can't just walk away. You have to contribute something.
Loser pays.
Toward what they paid their lawyers. And that makes such a huge difference. It puts a price tag on at the beginning, and it makes people look at their cases carefully. And it's good for the meritorious case, because then it works the other way. Then the defendant chips in for the meritorious case. So it helps in both directions. So that's one thing. Secondly, they treat lawyers differently. Most of these countries don't let lawyers take a contingency share in the litigation. Most of them restrain lawyers from soliciting, you know, from calling up and saying, boy, have I got a lawsuit for you. You didn't know about it, but I can sue. And then if you look at the rules of procedure, what do you have to do to sue? Most of them are more careful to regulate the process and say, you've got to make more of a showing early on that you've got a good case.
Those are good examples of what we need to do. How do we make that happen? And I only got about 30 seconds right now.
Okay. Lawyers are very powerful, but if you look at states like Texas, they just did a whole bunch of things more or less over the dead body of the lawyers' lobby because it was fought tooth and nail. But it's hard to win in Washington. It's so hard. At the state level, it's been a little more promising.
So we need to work at our state levels, and also I think we need to change our attitudes a little bit about this, and not try to turn this into as they call it jackpot justice.
Yeah,
Walter,
we need to look.
I got to stop you, but I tell you, we got more to talk about. We're going to get you back on. The book is called The Rule of Lawyers. The author is Walter Olson. He's our friend. Walter, thank you very much.
Well, my pleasure.
See you next time. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.